For me, it has already been a productive, enjoyable weekend. Appreciate so much. Gotten a lot of good comments, very helpful comments. There's a lot of times that that preachers are told as people exit the building, told, you know, that you presented a good lesson, that kind of thing, which is always appreciated. But always appreciated even at an extra level when people say, you made me think about this, or you made me think about that. You've challenged me to work on this, or caused me to reevaluate this. And I've gotten a lot of those comments this week and that this weekend, and that's obviously very helpful to me, and also shows us that we're thinking in terms of what do we do with the material that we're learning. Because I would tell you, with every sermon, we need to be very careful that we don't think that we have accomplished what God wants us to accomplish because our hearts have been touched by what has been said. That's the starting point, but our lives need to be changed. And so it isn't enough to feel that as a husband, when I present this material, and every time I present this material, and have done this for years, I see points in every lesson that I think, wow, you still need to work on that. And it isn't enough to acknowledge and say you convicted yourself again unless I do something with that conviction. And I think that's what we have to do. We have to consider, like we do with every sermon, what do I do with this? Where do I take this material? How does it change my life from this point forward? How do I truly grow in my relationship? And that's the challenge to you, a challenge to me with every lesson that we hear. So what are we going to do with the material that we've learned? And that becomes very important, and that kind of leads us into where we want to start with this lesson this morning. The lesson's entitled, What Does Every Marriage Require, or What Every Marriage Requires, in the sense of that there's no way for a marriage covenant to work except that we put certain things into place that we're going to talk about this morning. Tonight's lesson, if the Lord permits us to meet, is going to be a lesson on what every marriage needs, that you can't survive in marriage without what we're going to talk about tonight. As a matter of fact, there is no relationship at all that can survive without the things that we'll talk about tonight. It doesn't matter if we're talking sibling relationships, brother to brother, brother to sister, sister to sister, parent to child, individual to God, husband to wife, wife to husband. There is no relationship that can survive without the element that we're going to talk about this evening. That's how critically important it is to the survival of any relationship. But this morning we want to just talk about four things. And here's the order it's going to go in. It's going to be an idea of a mindset first, and an action to follow the mindset. And then another mindset and an action to follow that mindset. And I think that's the way God works with us with most of His Word. He gets us to think a certain way first, and then says, if you'll take that thought process, and then you'll do something with that thought process. As He wrote to the Colossians in chapter 3, He said, set your minds on, and He talked about the things above, because if you're thinking the right way first, then you can follow that with action. And that's what we want to do this morning as we think about what is it going to take. The lesson that follows this one is a lesson specifically on the covenant relationship of marriage and how important that is. But how am I going to sustain that? When I look at the world around me and understand, you know what, marriage is just in disarray in our society. And there are so many marriages that don't last, and so many that don't survive. What do I need to do to make sure that I'm going to help mine survive? I would tell you the same things that we're going to talk about this morning are exactly the same things that Jesus says that we have to have in our relationship with Him to create the long-lasting relationship with Him as well. That as we are having that relationship with Jesus, as we looked at on Friday, that is so much like our relationship with our spouse, that the same thing that's going to cause the spousal relationship to continue to last, having a lasting covenant, are the same things that will cause this relationship with Jesus to last. And those are the things that we want to kind of examine this morning. So we're going to look at, as we said, two mindsets, two actions that follow those mindsets. First, you're going to have to decide on your goals. That becomes critically important, that you establish real goals for your marriage. that you talk about in your marriage those goals, where it is you want to go with your marriage, what it is you want to accomplish. I would tell you there are so few couples that ever talk about where do we want to grow, how do we want to grow, what kind of mindset are we establishing, what are we putting out there before us to help us understand the way that we want to go in this life. Why is it that goals are so important? What do goals do for us? Yeah, they absolutely give us a sense of direction, and that's the first point that we want to talk about. They allow us to understand where we are going. We've established a point. We understand that with our relationship with God. We establish goals that we want to achieve. It gives us the direction in life. I love this quote. If you don't know what port you're headed for, no wind is a good wind. I used to sail and do a lot of boating in Florida when I lived in Florida. And that was one of the things you would talk about. People would say, as you'd get ready to get on a sailboat or a catamaran or something like that, people would say, is it a good wind today? Well, so there were some good winds and some bad winds. And people that weren't familiar with sailing didn't understand. It doesn't matter really which direction the wind is blowing, in the sense that you can sail into the wind the same as you can sail with the wind. Either direction you can sail. It's just that when you're sailing into the wind, you do what they call tacking, and you're sailing at about a 45-degree angle into the wind so that the wind can come behind the sail and pull you forward. And so when you're sailing into the wind, you're sailing like this. When you're sailing with the wind, you're sailing like this. The wind can get behind you, and you can go pretty much straight the direction you want to go. And so they would say, is it a good wind or a bad wind? Well, I don't know. Where am I going? If I don't know which direction I'm going to go, I don't know if it's a good wind or a bad wind. I would tell you that becomes the primary thing for us to start with. Think in terms of Jesus. It's not only that it gives us direction, but it also allows us to be very focused on what we're doing. In Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, look at that passage. Hebrews chapter 12, 1 and 2. You remember we talked about yesterday a gentleman that came up to me and talked about the fact that he would have fallen asleep with the other disciples. You remember we talked about the disciples were being taught a lesson by Jesus that they were, like all people, weak in the flesh, even though they might have been very strong of mind or spirit. But Jesus told them to do what before they fell asleep? Told them to pray and watch. He said, watch and pray. Now, when it comes time for the cross, because they slept, we know that, right? And we understand, you know, I'm not saying, you know what, so let's hammer the disciples. They were tired. They were wearied. We know that. Jesus knew that they were tired and that they were weary, but he also knew they were about to go through the toughest temptation of their life, didn't he? He knew they were about to go through this incredible trial. Along with him, even though his trial was going to be more severe than theirs, they were going to be put through a trial like they had not been previously, as long as he walked with them. So Jesus says, watch and pray. Jesus did what while they were sleeping? He prayed. And so when we get to the cross, Jesus is able to go through that whole scenario without failing, isn't he? Now, he doesn't do that because he's God. If he does, then I don't learn much from that lesson, I can tell you. If he only does that because he's God, then I can't do what he did because I'm not God. I don't have that power. I think he did that because he tapped into the power that God gives all of us if we choose to do that. So the disciples are sleeping. Jesus is praying. He's very focused. And so they fail because they are not as focused as he is. They're not praying. They're not sitting there pleading with their God to help them through this trial that they are about to have to endure. In Hebrews chapter 12, it tells us Jesus could clearly see something, couldn't he? Look what it says. It tells us starting in verse 1, therefore, since we also are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking unto Jesus. So now there's the visual point for us. Look at how Jesus did this. Isn't that what he's saying? He says, if you want to win this race, look unto Jesus. That's your example. Who what? The author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. So what enabled Jesus to endure the cross? the expectation of the joy, what he saw beyond the cross, wasn't it? He didn't just look at the cross. He understood he's going to have to go through this trial. But it was what he saw beyond. That's goals. That's understanding where I am going. That is this ability to be focused. After our relationship with God, this is the most important relationship we will ever have in life. Marriage. It is the one relationship that is lifelong, God intended. We have three children. Their primary relationship in life is no longer my son or Judy's son. They're still our sons. But that relationship has ceased to be prime in their life because all three of them are married. And God told them, you shall leave your father and mother and cleave to your wife. They are primarily now the husband of their wives. That's not, even though they're our children for life, as long as we live, they'll still be our children. It's not a relationship that is intended to be lifelong. God intends that they leave our home and establish their own. But he intends that I be married to my wife as long as we both live. That's what he intends. It is the top priority relationship. And so as we think about that, how are we establishing goals in our marriage? How are we thinking in terms of our marriage and sitting down? How many people say, you know what, where's our marriage going to be in a year? Where's it going to be in 5 years? We need to do that with Christianity, don't we? I mean, with our lives with God. Where do I want to be in 5 years? I remember on one occasion, a lady talking to Homer Haley. And I don't know if you ever met Homer or not, and the man, regardless of what you feel he taught about certain things, that's not the point here. He knew the scriptures better than any other single man I ever met in my life. He could quote the Bible. I'm not talking about he could quote some. You could pull out, and they used to do that when we were at Florida College, you could pull out your Bible and you could open up to some obscure passage in one of the prophets and you could just pick a verse and present your case, says the Lord, bring forth your strong reasons for the king of Jacob. And he'd say, oh, that's Isaiah chapter 41, verse 21. And you're thinking, seriously? And he might miss it a verse or two occasionally because he wasn't as concerned about verses as locations and prophets, but he could just do that. And he was just quoting verses in one of his lessons, and a lady came up to him afterwards and said, that's incredible how well you know the scriptures. She says, I'd give 20 years of my life to know the scriptures the way that you do. And he wasn't boasting in any fashion. He just looked at her and said, it'll take more than that. He knew it took him more than that. But he was a man that was so focused and so intent on learning the scriptures that he dedicated year after year after year after year to learning God's word. And he's just saying, that's a good goal, but you're going to have to make sure you understand what it's going to take to accomplish that. We need to do that in marriage. We need to establish goals in our marriage. We need to understand how it is that we're going to accomplish that. And to do that, you've got to have priorities and boundaries. You have to do that. You have to set some parameters. If marriage was going to become my top focus of my life when I got married, there were certain things that were going to have to fall by the wayside. Would you agree with that? How many of you ever do a to-do list or have a day planner or something like that when you start your day? How many of you have ever looked at that day planner or that to-do list and the first thing you understood was, can't do it all today? There's more on the schedule than I can get done. You ever been there? So the next thing you have to do is what? You have to prioritize, because in doing so, what you're acknowledging is what? Well, something's more important, but you have to... What's that? You can't do everything, so it means something's got to fall off the schedule. Something is going to go undone in order that this can be done. That's an acknowledgement with a to-do list when you prioritize, isn't it? I'm saying this can't be done because this is going to be done. That becomes important. And when we wrestle with that sometimes, there was a book that was written, or a little booklet that was written, called The Tyranny of the Urgent. Don't know if you've ever read that, but it talks about sometimes the things that appear urgent take the place of the things that are important. And there are things that are important in your marriage. Second to your relationship with God, your marriage is the most important thing in your life. God says that. He's saying this is the one lifelong relationship. So outside of your relationship with him, it takes prime focus. And if it's going to work, there are going to be some things that have to fall by the wayside. I played a lot of sports when we first got married and before we got married. But I was going to have to choose. I couldn't dedicate the time that I wanted to dedicate to all the sports and all the hobbies that I had when I was single and still dedicate the same amount of time that I needed to dedicate to my wife. So something has to fall by the wayside. We have to have boundaries because we've established goals. Here's the most important thing. We're going to talk about those goals. So I'm going to have to let some things. Maybe it's that recreation. What are other things that may have to lose time in our lives? TV. Friends. I'm sorry, what? Work. We may have been the type of person that you could work lots of hours and not ever think about it because it was only you in the relationship, but you may have to change that as well. There, we just have to make sure we're prioritizing. Now, this becomes critically important as you think about who you marry, because there are a lot of reasons that I would advise young Christians as they're dating. Here's why it's important for you to date Christians and to marry a Christian. But one of them, to me, just kind of overrides all the rest. Why does this become critically important? You ever been in a three-legged race? What's the difficulty in a three-legged race? Coordinating. What else did I hear? Working together, because two bodies working exactly together isn't always easy, is it? And so where one may be leaning a little bit this way, the other one may be leaning a little bit this way, and that just makes it a little bit more difficult, doesn't it? How critically important is it that if I understand that marriage must have a goal and that life must have a goal, and if my life goal is to serve God with all my heart and all my strength, if that's my life goal, which it needs to be, we understand that. Your life goal needs to be to serve God. So if my life goal is to serve God, how detrimental is it to me if the second priority goal, which is my marriage, the second priority relationship, my marriage, if I choose to marry somebody who does not have the exact same direction in life that I have? You see, that's the difficulty of that. I have to get somebody who's headed in the same direction. It's not good enough just to be a good person. If their goal in life is not to seek God, then I'm going to have a harder time regardless. I'm going to have a harder time reaching that goal myself if I don't have the full support of the one who's with me. It becomes critically important that we make those kinds of judgments. And so I would tell you, even beyond just is that person a Christian, a baptized believer in God, I think we need to also evaluate what is their real direction in life. Are they spiritually focused? I know we'll grow in that area, but I need to make sure the person understands this is where I'm going. And if you can help me go there, that would be great if we do that together. But if you're not going to help me go there, I don't help myself by hooking myself to you for life. We need to make sure that we've got the same goal in mind. It becomes critically important that I evaluate that as I'm evaluating who I'm going to marry. But then secondly, not only the idea of the deciding on your goals, then that's the mindset. All right, now we've got the goal set. Got the goal set. But then I'm going to have to develop a plan. What's the difference between a plan and a goal? I mean, this is really the starting point here. I know you start with the goal, but this is when it actually starts moving forward. It's more detailed. You're going to have to work out in your mind some details now, aren't you? You're going to have to take some action. All right, now we're beyond just the designation. Those details that are being spoken about, the action that's being spoken about, is to help me get from where I am to there. And so what you find out is that a goal is what you need to be, a plan is what you need to do to be what you need to be. The plan, you know, it's great, you're going to build a house. There's a reason that you draw plans. You know, you can have it all in your mind, but it's difficult to just start building it and putting it out there. somebody says, you know what, let's have a blueprint for that. Let's have a plan that shows us how this is all going to lay out together. I would tell you, God tells us it is that way with Christianity and with life as well. What are you going to do in your marriage? So it isn't enough just to say, you know what, in our marriage, here's where we want to be next year. We would like to be closer in this way. We would like to be stronger in this way. Because at some point you're going to have to say, so how are we going to get there? We understand that that happens. And if not, we wrestle with different things. You get that someday syndrome. We've talked a lot about prayer in our congregation at Nashua, because I think that's one of the areas that we as Christians, both individually and collectively, really need to just bolster ourselves and get stronger in. I think that becomes very important. I think Christ was this incredible man of prayer, and if we follow his example, that we'll understand developing a relationship with God, that becomes so critical to it. And so as we work on that, one of the things I talked about, I gave some quotes in one of the classes that I talked about and said, guys like Martin Luther, who said things like, I've got so much to do that I start every day with 2 hours of prayer. You know, our mentality is we think if I started with 2 hours of prayer, my whole day would be behind. But his idea was, I've got so much to do, I need to spend that much time in prayer to start before I even begin the day. But think about that. So how many people in our minds have ever said, you know what, I need to be praying more? Now, I'm not asking for a show of hands, but I'm asking your own mind just to register that. I need to be praying more. Only to find out, maybe at the end of the year or the end of the time, whatever it was, period that we're looking at, we realize, you know what, I'm really not praying any more than I was before. I started praying some more, but I'm not really doing that much better than I was. Or how about people who say, you know what, I need to read the Bible more. But they don't end up reading the Bible more. You have to have some kind of plan in place to do that. You ever seen those Bible reading lists? You know, that just read through the Bible in a year, that kind of thing. Judy does that with the, I read by a different method than she does, but she uses one of those kinds of checklists and has gone through the Bible in a year, year after year after year after year after year, and checks off. Each day she knows, if I'm going to read through the Bible in a year, I have to read this chapter today. And so she can read it and check it off. There's a plan to accomplish the goal. Whatever plan, it doesn't have to be that plan, but I'm telling you, if you want to read the Bible more, you're going to have to establish how you're going to do that. If you want to pray more, you're going to have to establish how you're going to do that. If you want your marriage to grow, you're going to have to establish how you're going to do that. What are we going to do today? What are we going to do this week? What are the plans that I'm going to put into place? Came across this quote, and I thought it was just a good quote from Les Parrott, who's written several things on marriage. He says, make no mistake, you will never achieve your ideal marriage as mere passengers. You and your partner must have your hands on the wheel. I just like that. But you know what? You're gonna have to both work on this. You're going to have to put forth the effort. You're going to have the drive that is to do that. The good intentions don't get us anywhere that we want to go. I remember I mentioned to you that Ralph Walker is the one that taught me the gospel. I was a little misguided, but unguided a lot of times as well at that time of my life, and just didn't have a lot of direction in my life. And I was one of those people that just thought, you know what, let's just kind of go with the flow, and I'll do what I need to do based on that mentality. And his mother, I can tell you, to her credit, and to my benefit, more than once pulled me aside and she said, I just want you to remember something. Because I would talk about something I was going to do and then didn't get done. You ever been there? She'd pull me aside and she'd say, just remember one thing. And she'd always point down like she's pointing at the road. She says, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And I thought, you know what? I mean, at that time, I just thought, nah, you know, that's Mrs. Walker giving me another lecture. But You learn. That's the truth. Good intentions won't get you where you want to go. You're going to have to put a plan into effect to get you there. One man said, hell is to drift, heaven is to steer. I think that's exactly right. I think God would tell us the same thing. If you've got no direction, you've got no plan, you're not putting forth effort, drifting will never take you the right direction. You have to steer yourself to get the right direction. So how are we going to do that? How do we actually put a plan in place? I would tell you, you're going to have to ask for God's help first. Remember what Psalm 127 says? Unless the Lord builds the house, what? They labor in vain who build it. He said, you better start with God for your marriage. What does He want me to do? So, as I read Ephesians 5, it says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. And it talks about cherishing and nourishing, and it talks about that sacrificial love. I need to ask God, God, what can I put into effect in my life? What can I put into place that will make me that kind of lover of my wife? It's not just that I want to become that person. How do I do that? God, please help me understand, what steps can I take to get there? What can I do? When we talked about yesterday, the things that husbands can learn to do for their wives, the things that wives can learn to do for their husbands because of the difference in the way we think. Now as a husband, I can say, all right, if that means that much to her, here's what I'm going to do. Every day this week, I'm going to say this. Or every day this week, I'm going to do that. That's my plan I put into effect. Then you can act on that. We need to ask God's help for that. You're going to have to consider what matters most. We talked about prioritizing. That's a decision in your plan. You're going to have to write down what things I can and cannot do. You have to prioritize your marriage. Michelle Weiner Davis, who writes on marriage topics, wrote these words. The number one cause for the breakdown of marriages today is the same issue that causes infidelity. Couples aren't prioritizing their marriage. People spend time on their careers, their kids, community affairs, hobbies, and sports, but they take their spouses for granted. It just doesn't work that way. In other words, to have a strong marriage, your spouse must come first. Behind God, that is absolutely true. I need to figure out exactly how am I going to spend time with my wife and set that time aside. How are we going to get the quality time together that we need to get together? I'm going to have to put into a plan every day to say something, telling my spouse how important they are, how much I respect them or how much I love them, whatever things. I've got to have some kind of plan for that. I encourage couples to write a mission statement for their marriage and for their family. And it just says, here's who we are, here's what we want to do. If that helps you to do that, spend time talking about your commitment one to another. All of those things. And once you consider what matters most, the next thing you're going to have to decide is, what am I going to change? What would be the only thing that would cause you not to have to consider this question? Perfect. If it was perfect now. That's the only thing. So if any of us are going to walk out this morning and say, you know what? My marriage is perfect. I am the ideal husband, or I am the ideal wife. I've got no way to grow. Then just ignore this point. But if that's not you, then we need to walk out of here today and say, what am I going to change? Based on the things we've talked about this weekend, how am I going to become a better husband? How am I going to become a better wife? How am I going to become a better servant of my God by becoming a better husband or a better wife? You're going to have to decide. And then in order to accomplish this, you're going to have to set some short-term goals. Don't set your goal that says, here's where I want to be 10 years down the road. Set that goal, that's okay. But you're not going to get there if the only goal you have is 10 years down the road. You're going to have to set a goal that gets you through today or tomorrow or this week. Or a goal for this month, or a goal for this year. Set some short-term, attainable goals. We get taught that in work and other places, don't we? We got a guy that just graduated from Pittsburgh State and works for QT now in their corporate office. And he popped back in for spring break the other day, and I said, hey, you got that CEO position yet? He says, no, but I'm working on it. He says, here's where I'm going next. And he was already looking at the next position he wanted to strive to achieve. And I thought, what a great way of expressing that. He's just saying, you know what, CEO, yeah, that'd be great. That's what I'd like to be someday, CEO of QT possibly. But he says, I can't get to CEO unless I get to this management position first. And that was what he was driving for. He's just saying, that's my goal right now. I want to work in such a fashion that I can achieve this. That's attainable. That's attainable, and that's what we have to do in our marriages. Sit down and say, you know, the people, when I told them about Martin Luther, and he's talking about starting each day in prayer with 2 hours. I mean, how many of us wouldn't like to say, you know what, I pray for over 2 hours every day? But I would say chances are there aren't any of us or very few of us that could say that. I pray for 2 hours every day. Well, I can just tell you, if you're praying for minutes a day now, you're not going to start tomorrow praying for 2 hours. You can set that goal if you want, but I'm just telling you, you're just setting yourself up for failure if you decide starting tomorrow, I'm going to pray for 2 hours every day. Because we're going to have to set something attainable, short-term, end there. Same way in our marriage. Set attainable, real, short-term goals. Thirdly, we need to determine to commit. That's back to a mindset. All right, so now I've got a goal. I know where I want to go. I've got a plan as to how I'm going to get there. I've laid it out and I've designed it. This is how I'm going to get there. Now I'm back to a mindset. I'm going to have to have a commitment in my mind that says, that is where I'm going. I'm going to stick with it. Isn't that the nature of our relationship with Christ? Because that's going to require some work, as we'll see in a minute. We were talking yesterday, I think it was yesterday, and talked about the whole concept of commitment. How committed should I be the day that I got married to Judy? Am I going to grow in that commitment? I always ask people, are you going to grow in your commitment in your marriage? How about your commitment to Christ? Are you going to grow in your commitment to Christ? You know, be careful answering that question, because I would tell you the answer to that is absolutely not. Or should be absolutely not. Why? Because day one that I come to Jesus Christ, let me ask you this. Does he expect you to come with something less than full commitment? All right, so he expects you to be 100% committed the day you come to him, correct? How committed should I be to my wife the day I marry her? 100% committed? What we're going to grow in is a knowledge of what that commitment means. I mean, I was committed day one, but I assure you, I learned things about what that means once I got married. Would you agree with that? The day I came to Jesus Christ, I was committed to give my life to Christ and to give him my whole life. But I assure you, I have learned what that means on a day-by-day basis, haven't you? And so I grow in understanding of what that commitment is. But day one is what caused me to say, whatever I find that commitment to be, I'm going to do. That's the nature of the commitment, isn't it? That I, on day one, I've committed, but I'm saying, as I learn what that means, I'm already committed that I'm going to do whatever it means. I'm just learning what it means. We come fully committed. That's the way we have to be to these goals that we establish. I need to be determined that, you know what, is it going to require some work? Yeah. But I'm committing on the front end that I'm going to do that. That's what the vows are all about. That's what the vows are all about. I'm making commitments. You know, when we talk about the things that are going on in marriage, we have to understand we've made promises. That's what we'll talk about in the lesson following this one. But that's what those vows are all about. So what are the things that destroy our commitment? What causes us not to remain committed to those prioritized goals? I'm sorry, what? Yeah, we're weak. We just give in. Other things hit us, and we just don't endure because we've got weakness of flesh, and we understand that. And so we recommit, don't we? We redecide. I failed on that particular day, but I'm going to redecide that. Other things. Distractions. And so it's very easy. I've got a lesson on Satan's weapons of mass distraction, because he's much more gifted with that than he is with a lot of other things in our lives. He doesn't always hit us head on. He just kind of hits us from the side. Just gets you distracted. Other things. Selfishness is a huge problem with commitment. I commit to things, but I think about myself. We understand that, don't we? Selfishness. I used to have a recliner. Don't know if you've ever watched the show Frasier. It wasn't quite as bad as his dad's recliner, if you've ever seen that show. But it was at the extreme comfort level, if you understand what I mean. It had been sat in a lot of times. And that was back in the days before remotes. You know, I'm sure we've got people in here that didn't know you ever had to get up and turn the channel on the TV. There aren't even any knobs on TVs anymore. But you did. You had to get up and actually turn the channel, you know, to all three of them that you got. And I would sit in the chair and be watching something on TV that I was just utterly bored with, just waiting for somebody else to get up so I could say, hey, while you're up, would you mind changing the channel? You ever done that? Or you could sit in the chair and be parched to the point that you thought, I may not survive much longer, and wait for somebody else to get up and say, hey, while you're up, can you get me a drink? Very easy to become focused on self. Well, came home from work one day, the recliner was gone. Not at my request. I assure you, it was not gone at my request, but it was gone. It had been given away without my knowledge at all. It was that mirror of my marriage life, my wife saying, the recliner is not good for you. Well, didn't like it at the time, but she was absolutely correct. It was absolutely purely selfishness that would cause me to do some of those things. Now, you're thinking about yourself. When I'm serving a Lord who says, you know what? The Lord would have been the one who's jumping up out of the recliner and saying, can I get you a drink? Can I do something for you? Can I provide this for you? How can I serve you? Selfishness makes it difficult for us to be committed to other people. We fight that. The other is overcommitment that I wanted to point out in addition to the things that we said. We become so committed to other things that it becomes very difficult in life. One of the things you're going to have to find out, to be dedicated to your marriage, to be committed to your marriage, here's one thing we need to understand. Your kids are not going to have to play three sports, play two musical instruments, and have karate lessons and all the other things that go with it. I watch parents today whose kids are so involved that husband and wife get zero time together. It won't work. It won't work. I assure you, you can't do for your kids what needs to be done for your kids if you are sacrificing your marriage to do so. Just remember that. I'm not saying your kids can't be involved in things, but you cannot be overcommitted to one aspect of your life and be properly committed to the other. Tough balance in this day and age. I understand that. Commitment is a choice. Remember that. When you're laying that out, it's a choice. Remember what Joshua said? Joshua said what? Choose this day. He said it's your choice, didn't he? He said you can serve God. You can serve the gods that are across the river. You can serve the gods in the lands that are here. You can serve the gods back from where you came. He says, you got a lot of choices. Remember we talked about yesterday, God's pro-choice? He is. He's always pro-choice. He's saying, you can make the choice. Choose whom you're going to serve. He said, but as for me and my house, we're serving the Lord. That's our commitment. We're serving the Lord. That's the case in my marriage. I get a choice to say, I will serve this marriage, or I won't. It will be top priority, or it won't. That's a choice on my part to decide that. And then what I'm going to find out is, that's going to require something of me. It's going to require time and sacrifice from me. Remember the whole discussion? The people, when Joshua said, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. What did the people say? You remember? People said, we're on board with that. We're going to serve God too. And Joshua said, great, let's all go together and serve God, right? Joshua said, you can't serve the Lord. Try that for an evangelistic tactic. How's that work for you? You know, you cannot be my disciple, Jesus says. You know, the method of all of that is what? To discourage people from coming to him? No. Joshua was saying, do you understand the Lord's going to require a lot out of you? Do you understand what you're committing to? When I commit to marriage, it's going to require time and sacrifice on my part. I have to acknowledge that. That's the mindset. I have to know that going in, and God would have us to understand that. And finally, you're going to have the dedication to finish. That's now the action that follows the mindset. That's the putting one foot in front of the other. I'm committed. I'm going to get there. Sometimes I can just walk like this on the way there. But I assure you, sometimes getting there is just forcing yourself to take one more little step because there are tough times. There are bumps in the road. There are times that don't go the way that you want to go. There are difficulties that we experience. We understand that. There are trials within marriage. And it's going to require two things of me to get there. It's going to require incredible patience. I have to be so patient to be married to my wife. See, that's one of those lines. It sounds horrible, doesn't it, when you say it that way? But it does. It takes patience to be married to anybody. I assure you, whatever patience I have to exhibit to be married to her, she has to exhibit more to be married to me. We're not a very patient people. We understand that. We pray for patience. I tell people, pray for patience in your marriage. There's a danger in that, though. I got a sermon called Praying Dangerously. You want to talk about a dangerous prayer? Pray for patience. How do you get patience? Trials. So, I mean, you're asking God, you know what? I'd really appreciate if you could throw some major roadblocks in the way here to help me become a more patient person. But we're not patient, are we? I love the description I read of one guy. His car stalled at a light, and he's trying to start the car. The guy behind him is just laying on the horn, even though you can tell he's got car trouble or he'd be going, and he's just blowing his horn. The guy got out of his car, walked back to the car behind him, tapped on the window. The guy rolled down his window and says, "Hey, I'm having difficulty starting my car." He says, "If you do me a favor," he says, "if you'll come up and try and start my car," he says, "I'll honk your horn for you." I thought, that's how impatient are we? You know, we'll be at the grocery store. You come around that last aisle and you're eyeing all the registers because you know which cashiers are faster and you know which lines are longer. It's like, I don't possibly want to wait that extra 3 seconds. Computer takes 2 seconds to boot up and I'm thinking, come on. We're not very patient. It takes that kind of patience to be married. I've got to have room to grow. I've got to give the other person room to grow. But even, I think, more importantly than that, it requires endurance. When you read about Job, it isn't the patience of Job, not like the patience of just having to bite your tongue for a minute. That isn't what Job shows us. Job shows us endurance. Consider the endurance of Job. He had to bear up under a lot of weight for a long time, didn't he? Incredible weight. And there are times within a marriage where things aren't going as smoothly as others, where there are times that are tough. And I'm determined, the same as they are in raising your children. What would it have been like if the first time you had real struggles with your child, you just said, "That's it, you're not my child anymore." I know we were tempted. Give them their walking papers, you know, pretty early sometimes, you think that. Mark Twain had the solution to that. He said, when your kids are born, says you should put them in a barrel with a hole in the barrel and feed them through the hole until they turn 16, then you should plug the hole. I'm not sure that's the best solution, but that would solve it at least. The whole idea of what it takes, it just, sometimes, man, you just got to put one foot in front of the other. You just have to force yourself to take the next step. Why? Because I'm committed to make it work. Because I'm doing this for God. Because it's what God expects of me. And because what others are going to look at me and see that this is what I know about my God. So it's lifting it up and putting one foot down. A few years ago, I'll give you an example of this. A few years ago, a group of us went out to Colorado. We decided to do a summit hike. I'd never been in Colorado before. As a matter of fact, growing up in Florida, moving to Missouri, I had changed my elevation from sea level to about 500 feet. And so that's the elevation I had been at. And so now I'm going to Colorado on a trip, and we decided on day two of the trip, which was not the wisest thing. Nobody told us that ahead of time. We thought, we'll do a summit hike. Well, hadn't had a lot of time to acclimate. We started at 10,000 feet on the trail we were doing and hiking to a mountain that was 13,000 feet high. There's no oxygen at 10,000, I found out. No matter what they tell you, they may tell you there's some, there's none, I assure you. At 10,000 feet. We're walking in the tree line to start with, and the guide, we had talked to a guide, he says, it's going to take you 4 hours to get up from that point. It was a 4-mile hike. You ever walk on a treadmill at 1 mile per hour? You have to look down to make sure you're moving forward. So I'm thinking, this guy's joking. Seriously, 1 mile per hour is what I'm supposed to walk? So we walked at a neighborhood pace, probably about 4 miles an hour. 9 minutes, 59 seconds into our walk, the entire group, and I was at the lead, I'm ashamed to say. That's why they were walking at that pace. I was just determined this guy's wrong. 9 minutes, 59 seconds, every one of us is sitting on the ground doing everything we can to try and find oxygen somewhere in the surrounding air. We are sucking wind as hard as we possibly can. So we decide we're going to slow down, go the pace that the guy said. Maybe he was smarter than I thought he was. And so we slow down and we start working our 4 hours up there. But I'm telling you, when we got toward the top, when we were close to 13,000 feet, I was literally walking from me to about where David is and stopping and taking about 4 or 5 more breaths because I'm thinking that exertion now. And when we got to the point of climbing, they get to the boulder climbing section. You know, you have to climb over some boulders to get to the top. Not boulders, plural. It's boulder and then catch your breath again and then boulder. I'm moving along and I'm thinking, but we had determined we were summiting that mountain. And so it was because of that determination, that commitment that we had made, that goal that was before us and we could see it, that we kept pressing forward. But I'm telling you, it was tough. Buzzards followed us for the last hour of our hike. They knew it was nearly over. If I had not made that determination and that commitment verbally, and I assure you, making it verbally made a difference too. If I'd only had that commitment in my mind, I would have sent the rest of the group on. You guys go ahead. I'm having a good time here. if I hadn't made that determination, that commitment, said we were summit the mountain, that's what we're going to do, that's the goal, we're determined we're going to do it, I would have stopped when it got that hard. I would have. But I'm telling you, in marriage, it's the same thing. Commit first, and then have the dedication to put one foot in front of the other. Because sometimes we know, people that have been married very long, understand there are days, and sometimes longer than days, that you have to take much smaller steps because it's not moving as easily as it was before. We have to do that. Have that determination to keep moving forward, the dedication to finish. And remember, it is always easier to stay up than it is to catch up. Always easier. Don't fall behind. I did that twice on that hike. I said, you guys go ahead and walk ahead. I'll catch you in a minute. That was an excruciatingly bad mistake, I can assure you. Because if you can't walk at the pace they're already walking, there is no possible way to walk at a pace fast enough to catch up and make up the ground. It was just that much more difficult. And I'm telling you, that to me was a good picture. And I'm not saying my marriage to Judy has been like those last steps on Mount Ida. That's not the case at all. The point is, sometimes it's tough, and unless you've already made the commitment, you're not going to have the dedication just to put one foot in front of the other, but that's what it's going to take. Just make sure you stick with it, because what you'll find out is that it is everything God says that it can be, and it is a picture of our relationship with Him. So He intends that it be glorious on earth so that it gives the picture of the glorious relationship with Him. And we can have that. We can have the blessings that God says come from marriage if we'll just follow the plan and have the dedication to stick to it that He says we should have. Appreciate so much your attention this morning. I would tell you, if you put those four things in place, dealing with the concepts that we've already talked about, I think you can put in place the things that you need to have the marriage that God would love you to have. Thank you so much for your attention this morning.